you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that's run by freakers, not zombies. I'm back from vacation and here to talk about lots of video games, including Mortal Kombat 11, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Hitman 2, Baba Is You, and Final Fantasy X. Then we take a deep dive into the new PlayStation 4 exclusive open world game, Days Gone, which is interesting, if not mind-blowing. Finally, it's time for off-topic chat on Avengers Infinity War, Carmen Sandiego, and the HBO show Barry. All right, freakers, let's go. And we are back for another episode. My name is Jason Schreier, coming back at you from vacation, running off very little sleep right now, straight off a plane ride, 12-hour plane ride. And I am joined, once again, by my co-host, Kirk Hamilton.
Hello, Jason. It's nice to see you again.
And my other co-host, Maddie Myers.
Hi, Jason.
Hello, what's up? Hello, split screen friends. I hope that you guys had a good time without me last week.
We did.
Yeah, it was
we
pretty
had
good.
Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was a good time.
I heard it was very unorganized and that nobody was around to herd the cats.
I don't think that I would characterize our podcast as very unorganized. I would describe it as differently organized.
It was more free organized. Form. There's nothing wrong with that.
I only
Jazz,
say that.
No, et cetera.
I only say that because we got an email from someone being like, "Hey, it was nice to not have Jason and being around herding the cats and keeping everything structured." So I was like,
"Well,
oh,
you
okay.
know, it's good to change it up." I'm sure there are people who like that, people who don't. This way, we appeal to everyone, every
That's
listener.
True.
Exactly. That's the goal. So one quick note. Up top before we get started, a lot of people have been asking us, what's the deal with Game of Thrones? When are our recaps coming back? Of course, I've been on vacation, so Kirk and I are going to go off and do recaps of episodes 1 and 2 of Game of Thrones, and I believe we are going to publish that either Thursday or Friday of this week. And then starting on Monday after episode 3, we will be doing our normal weekly recaps for the final 4 episodes of the series. And yeah, so expect lots of Game of Thrones to come. Don't worry, we have not forgotten about you, Game of Thrones fans.
I feel like that that episode 3 recap is going to be pretty chill.
It's going to be a super chill, definitely
super chill episode.
definitely no deaths, no heartbreaking
nothing,
scenes.
Nothing major is going to happen this Sunday night, I don't think.
but we won't get into that now, so stay tuned. Our recaps will be on the same split screen feed, so look for them there. So yeah, I was on vacation. As you guys know, I don't remember if I told the show, but I was in Israel for the past week and it was wild. Because that country is wild. Have either of you guys been to Israel?
No.
So it's like this wild, insane country. Obviously, you guys have seen it in the news, heard about it, talked about for political reasons. But just going there and like being immersed in the history of everything is just crazy. Like, I was in Jerusalem for 4 days, and Jerusalem is just this holy religious city that is just historical for tons of reasons and holy to pretty much every major religion. And you go around and it's just this bombardment of history, where you walk around and you look over here and there's a wall that has been standing there for 500 years, and then you look to the right and you see across from that is a wall that's been there for 1,000 years, and they're competing over who's been there longer. And then you go around
like the walls
and
are competing,
like, yeah, the walls are constantly
talking to one another.
Yeah,
the one shit talking each other.
You think you've been around?
Yeah,
I've been around.
It's an encapsulation of the Middle East conflict. Like one of them is an Israeli and one of them is an Arab. No, but yeah, you're going around and it's like, so you're walking through. So in Jerusalem, there's what's called the Old City, which is the really historical part, and that's where the Western Wall is and the Temple Mount, mm-hmm. which is the big gold dome. That's the big Muslim sacred place, and the Wailing Wall is right under that, and that's the big Jewish sacred place. And then surrounding that are all these streets and walls. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to Rome, but it's sort of like the old city area of Rome or any other European city where the streets are super narrow. You can't fit cars in them. And you're just mm-hmm. winding your way through this maze of streets and just homes and stuff that have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. And there's within this old city, there's the Jewish quarter, the Muslim quarter, the Armenian quarter, and the Christian quarter, which is super fascinating. And it's like all these different, just this giant melding of cultures in a way that I think is unlike any other city that I've seen, just because it's been through so many different like eras. At one point, the Arabs were controlling it, and then the Ottomans, and then the Arabs again, and the Turkish, and the Turkish are the Ottomans, but the British and the Jews, and it's just been through so many hands over time that it's become this big, just hodgepodge of cultures, and it's really fascinating to see. You go through, and you're in this marketplace where Arab salesmen are hawking their wares, and then you suddenly pass by this huge group of religious Jews in their big garbs with their big side curls and black hats, and it's really wild. It's really an experience like no other, and the food is really good too. A funny story, and then we can get into some video game talk. So this to me is like, I don't want to get into the politics of the Middle Eastern conflict. We can save that for another podcast.
Oh, you don't want to just quickly solve that one right now?
We'll maybe do that on another episode.
Let's put that one off.
Let's do a spoiler cast.
It's not that pressing.
Israeli-Palestinian conflict spoiler cast. We'll do that in a spin-off episode. But this to me was really funny as just an encapsulation of the whole thing. So here in America, so there's a salad, right? And it's like tomatoes and cucumbers and some olive oil and some lemon and like maybe a little bit of parsley on there. And typically in America, it's called Israeli salad. Like my parents, when my grandma was born in Jerusalem, when she makes it, she calls it Israeli salad. So we're eating at this place in Jerusalem, and it's this restaurant that's run by Arabs. And on the menu, it's called Arab salad, like Aravit salad. And so my grandma asks for Israeli salad, and the waiter is like, oh, Arab salad. And my grandma's like, Israeli salad. and the waiter's like, it's Arab salad. And I was just thinking to myself, oh my God, this is like the entire thing in a nutshell. Like they can't even agree on what the salad is called. That's what this whole thing is all about. It's who gets the naming rights to the chopped salad of tomatoes and cucumbers.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the naming rights, but it's also like the various cultural trappings and the overlap between those cultural trappings. I mean, that stuff is super fascinating.
It's really interesting. Yeah, I was talking to an Israeli relative of mine about just the way that like people even argue about who owns which food and who came up with each of these food items. And it's gotten to this point where it's just because it's this giant hodgepodge of culture and history, it's just really interesting to see and to come in as a tourist and just look around and see, oh man, look at all this stuff. So yeah, no, it was a really cool trip. Yeah, incredible food, and just, yeah, really interesting. Lots of cool sights. And Tel Aviv, by the way, is this like gorgeous city. It's like if you transplanted New York and put it on this giant beach, it just looks incredible. It's just an incredible place. Cool. So you guys, Kirk, do you want to read through some emails that you wanted to get through before we get into the show?
Yeah. I thought it would be fun to read a few listener emails/tweets that people responded to my and Maddie's conversations from last week. So I thought that might be just kind of cool to share a few, some of your thoughts. And as always, you can email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com with feedback or thoughts on our conversations or really anything, I guess. So feel free to write us.
Anything at all, and
anything.
We'll read it.
And we'll just read that shit.
Not necessarily on the show, but we'll at least read the
That's
email.
True. We will read it. We do read all our emails. First one comes from Nick. Maddie, you want to maybe read this one?
Yeah, sure. So Nick writes, regarding the most recent podcast and the discussion about listening to propaganda in-game, while I mostly agree with you, there is one game series that stands out as bucking this trend, which bears mentioning. Fallout has great in-game radio, even if it can be a bit preachy about the powers in the capital/Vegas wasteland. But there was such a cool feeling when the radio propaganda or music is interrupted and they bring up the mysterious wanderer and his deeds. I recall playing Fallout 4, and then the news guy came on the radio and I said out loud, "Hey, that's me!" It's worth mentioning. I think this can be great when it's done well. I think I mentioned Bioshock Infinite, at least in passing, as like an example of a time I wasn't a fan of this, where like everybody in the game is obsessed with you and constantly talking about you. And I feel like it was a bit much in that game. And also obsessed with Comstock, who, you know, just another character that they're also obsessed with in addition to you, question mark. Yeah, so I don't know. It can totally be done well in a game if it's subtle, I think. It sounds like this one is.
I think, yeah, I'm a little tired of the trope, but I agree. I agree with Nick. Okay,
yeah, totally.
Next email comes from Fraser. Fraser writes, this is on the discussion of difficulty that Maddie and I had regarding Sekiro and other games as a whole. It was a whole conversation. Fraser just wanted to share his thoughts. Fraser writes, the discussion of difficulty in video games and the ways that we look to others in the community at large to help us, with Sekiro being a proxy of the moment, got me thinking about my own approach and why I adopt it. I'm someone who deeply enjoys From Software's games and has sunk plenty of time into them, but I don't consider myself very good and have never actually finished one, though we came very close on Bloodborne. He writes, I come to games with a history in sports, and in many ways, I treat From's titles in particular like sports in their own right. The constant cycle of failure, drilling, mastery, and growing complexity scratches the same itch that I feel when practicing tennis patterns, for example. And boss encounters are similar to matches in that analogy, to tennis matches. And you're presented with a particular technical profile, you can take a few tactical approaches, but you need to stay attentive for minutes at a time or be severely punished. When you succeed, you can get a tidy little card with your slain beast or shinobi execution, or you get a tip to the changeover with a set titled in your favor. This is tennis versus Sekiro. Like many others, I find the payoff, both in terms of nuggets of narrative and the satisfaction of success in those encounters, to be massive. Not only have you won, but you know that you've executed your game plan because the AI doesn't have bad days on the other side of the net. In that framework, to address Kirk's open question about looking to friends for advice or watching segments on YouTube, I consider all of that akin to coaching and film study in sports. You're taking on knowledge needed to tackle a challenge, but ultimately, actually besting that challenge still lies with you. From Software in particular seems to design its games with drilling in mind, building mechanics like hollowing in the Dragon Ride, and where at their core, they're even ribbing you along the way. Not to mention, entire narrative threads are so deeply buried as to be almost impossible for a first-time player to find without searching out the pathway online. That is super true. All of which is to say that I applaud the player who can win without preparation, but personally, I find it all to be part of the experience and exercise of these games. It's not to say that there is a way to play these games, just one guy's approach for what it's worth. On that note, back to study the owl's patterns further. Yeah, I think that's just like an interesting perspective comparing it to sports. I think that's
no
kind of...
No fighting game analogy, though? What the heck, Fraser? Come on, it's so obvious.
Like it was
that's
right
what
there
I was
for
thinking.
You, man. Come on.
The whole time I read this, that I mean, was... it's... Of course, fighting games are like sports.
That was,
esports,
yeah.
Even.
I was sort of waiting for it to come. Though, actually, tennis is a lot like a fighting game. Emily, very good tennis player. Talking to her about tennis, fascinating sport. Not a sport I've ever played or know anything about. And yeah, man, very psychological, very strategic.
Oh,
and
it's
like, it is like a fighting game. So, tennis. last thing I just wanted to share is that someone who tweeted at me, who goes under Virtua Me, we were joking about ray tracing, and Virtua Me says, on the ray tracing subject, it can work with sound in the same way that it works with light rays. So for instance, a swimming pool environment in game, the room's geometry would dynamically affect the room's acoustics like in real life, which makes sense. So since the ray tracing is like casting light about the environment, it's also kind of defining the environment, and you can use that to change the sound, which I believe is what he's saying, which makes sense and is actually pretty cool. So that was
it
a clarification on us joking about what is ray tracing, what does it do? So
yeah,
that's what it does.
I still don't know if I know, but it sounds great.
It sounds neat. We'll see if it actually sounds neat when the PlayStation 5 comes out.
Yeah, so it's funny that every time I go on vacation, there's like some major gaming news. The last time I went on vacation in September of last year, Telltale shut down, and this time I go on vacation for a week, and the PlayStation 5 gets announced.
Yeah, it's though, fine. Was it that major, Jason? Was it really that major, the announcement?
Yeah.
This PlayStation 5
maybe not on the level of Telltale in terms of just the level of follow-ups that happened, but...
well, so you guys want to hear something funny?
Of course, always.
I believe that the reason...
Shemetti's not interested, sorry.
No, I do.
So I think they had a couple of good reasons for doing it this way, and I actually think it was a really smart PR strategy to be like, find a friendly outlet like Wired that'll be tech-focused and like drop your exclusive details there and stuff. And get a good reporter. I believe Peter Rubin at Wired is a respected, like, good reporter. Mm-hmm. Get him to come and talk to Mark Cerny. So it was a smart approach to do it this way, I would say. I think they did it for two reasons. One is because Microsoft is going to talk about their console at E3, and Sony won't be at E3, and so it was them kind of undercutting Microsoft by being like, hey, we're going to start the conversation early. The second, this is the juicy one, is that this actually coincided with when they're starting to send out dev kits to more and more third-party studios. Like right now, or before, a few weeks ago, only a few major first-party dev studios had actual PS5 dev kits and hardware usually locked away in a room where like only the people who need to know can actually see it. And I've heard stories about people at first-party studios like asking other people like, hey, what can you tell me about this thing? And like they won't say. So it's only certain people within these certain studios. Now, I believe, is about the time which actually makes perfect sense. It's 18 months before the planned launch, because fall of 2020 is when these things are going to come out. So that's when you have to start like really circulating dev kits. So now is the time where they're starting to send them out wider. And so the reason that they put this out is because they knew that those people would talk to me or talk to another reporter at a website like ours or Eurogamer or whoever else and leak details. So they're like, you know what? We don't want to deal with that. So we're just going to get ahead of it all and plant a story in Wired. So very smart approach, I would say.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
Same.
So yeah, do you guys want to talk about some video games that we've been playing?
Oh, all right.
Sure do.
There are a lot of video games to talk about. Maddie, why don't we start with you? Because you've been playing one of this week's big releases.
Yes, I have. Not nearly as much as I'd like to. I'm actually in New York City this week visiting the office, and right before I left, Mortal Kombat 11 came out, and I definitely went ahead and downloaded it and got up early just so that I could play it before work and before driving to New York. I'm really loving this game. Kirk, it sounds like you've played it a little bit, but I don't know if you care enough about Mortal Kombat as a franchise or genre
Mortal Kombat.
Oh, great. So, great. Yeah. I've played these games for a while. I'm super enjoying this one. I'm loving the tutorial, which has gotten some love on our website from Mike Fahey, because it's organized in a really nice way. They set up combos in a way that, at least to me, I think is easy to understand. Also, just personally, I find the combos in the Mortal Kombat games to be relatively easy to perform for my brain for whatever reason. It's usually just you hit the buttons like they're staccato notes, as opposed to you need to memorize a specific rhythm, and that rhythm only goes with this one combo or only goes with like a handful of combos, which is the thing that Street Fighter does a lot. And you have to kind of like figure out what each of those rhythms are and memorize those, which is fine. But in Mortal Kombat, it's pretty much like da 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 da, or like it's really not that much variation beyond that. And it's just you hit the buttons same amount of time in a row. And that's, I think, easier for everyone on some level. It's just a matter of like memorizing what buttons to hit. So that's cool. The tutorial also does a cool thing where like they teach you a few combos and then they make you defeat an opponent using like four of them. And they pick like kind of easy-ish ones, and it just seems really achievable to me. I guess that's easy for me to say, but I've played a lot of fighting game tutorials and like challenge modes and things like that, and some of them are deeply unhelpful and just lead me to be like, well, this is full of shit, and I'm going to go ahead and look up a bunch of YouTube videos that are like, you know, best such and such combos for whatever character I'm trying to learn, and then just watch those and like watch pros and invent my own training regimen. But this game actually seems like it has a really cool training regimen, and that's really great. I'm excited to dive into the story. I didn't have enough time to do that, but the playing of the game is really satisfying to me. So I think playing the story will be super, super fun as well.
So it has an interesting story, like a story that
It has a very corny, stupid, weird story that is awesome and always is awesome.
Got
and
it.
Does not make any sense, really, but it's great. And everyone is a goofy caricature of the set of 2 to 3 personality traits that they have because they're in a fighting game. So that's it. That's as many personality
Makes
traits
sense.
As they're allowed to have.
Yeah.
And then you watch a story about them. And then see a series of ridiculous justifications for each of them to be in one-on-one fights against each other, which may or may not matter to the plot.
What if there was a fighting game where each button was assigned to a different personality trait, and instead of actually fighting with moves, you had to fight with personality traits?
That would
and then the characters
amazing.
Could have more than two or three.
Yeah, that'd be great. Finally, they could have four. The number of personality traits they've always deserved to have.
Exactly. Or, well, then if you add, like, L, like, the joystick combos with the
right?
Yeah, you could
have, like, a really complicated psychological profile according to whatever combos you combine to form. Yeah. I don't know. No one's ever done
psychological
that.
Psychological fighting
game. Danganronpa might be that. I did bring my Vita with me on this trip, so next week I'll probably talk about that. Maybe I'll finally beat that game on this trip. We'll see.
Oh, excellent. Oh, man, you're in for a thrill. You're close to the ending, right? The ending
is, I think so, yeah. So I think I should be able to beat it. We'll see.
Oh, man. Kirk, what are you playing?
Well, so I played some Mortal Kombat 11, so I guess I'll add a couple thoughts. I like Mortal Kombat, and I'm not much of a fighting game person, but I've always liked Mortal Kombat. I haven't played all of them. I played, I think, all of the story for Mortal Kombat 9, and then did not play the whole story for Mortal Kombat
X. That was around
X.
when they started making the story modes really comprehensive.
Oh, yeah.
That game.
The story mode in that is incredible. Because, you know, so I love at least the first, I don't know how many there are, the first two Mortal Kombat movies are just incredible.
They are incredible, Mortal Kombat and I've seen them multiple times. I'm kind of obsessed with those
They're
movies.
Amazing. And the first one, I guess it was 9, the first NetherRealms one, that's like the modern treatment with the really elaborate story mode, was kind of like watching that movie again, and it was pleasing in the same way.
It was the same level of seriousness with which it should
which
be taken.
Yeah, which is great. It's just great. And so it's like a soap opera, like this ridiculous, you know, complicated, at this point, oh my God, like starting the story of this one. I'll say some stuff from the story from the first act. I think that'll be okay with people just because.
I think so. There's also time travel now involved in it.
It's kind of like time scrambling because which makes sense. So I'll get into that. So first off, the thing you're saying about
story
the tutorial.
Story Kingdom Hearts, you would hate it, Jason. Don't play these.
I mean, you're talking to a JRPG fan. Like, time scrambling is my middle name.
So the tutorial makes me think about the thing you're saying, Maddie, which I didn't do much of the tutorial, but it seems good. I did see Mike Fahey's article. Mm-hmm. One cool thing that Sekiro actually does is it gives you a legit tutorial, and it's a very similar thing where you're practicing certain moves and you have to do the move a certain number of times. Mm-hmm. It's very not Souls-y, like other Souls games don't have this. And it's just this guy, and you can fight him over and over again. He's also a character, which is kind of cool. But I really valued that in Sekiro since I really wanted to get good at that. I don't know if I really want to get good at Mortal Kombat, but I am with you on a valuable tutorial.
I mean, there's a lot
of
different levels of tutorial that you can choose to do. I would definitely recommend just going through the first couple of them just so that you have a sense of the basics. And then they get more and more complicated as they go, and you can just kind of stop at a certain point and be like, I feel like I've got enough moves that I can remember them for the next few hours of my life. And at least then you know how to do like the final blow move and like, you know, environmental attacks and all that crap. You'll get that and you'll be good.
I did the first tutorial because it tells you to. So yeah, I get it. I'll do them. It's tricky. So I started the story, and the story does this thing where it jumps from character to character, and each chapter is a different character. And as a result, I always wind up instead of doing tutorials, you have to pause it in the first fight, and I pause it and look at the move list.
Yeah,
because I want to know, you know, what my special moves are. That's interesting that you say that about combo entry in Mortal Kombat, where you kind of just press, like you start as playing what's her name, Sonya and Nick Cage's daughter, and your moves are a lot of back and forth stuff, because I think those are Sonya's moves too, is like forward back forward attack. And a lot of her moves have that similar forward, back, forward, up, like high punch, forward, back, forward, low punch. And it is very just like, I just play on the D-pad and I just go doot, 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 boom. And then she does the move, which is nice because I cannot really reliably do moves in other games.
I'm imagining you like looking down like you're an old person typing where you're just like doot, doot.
Well, so I'm describing it awkwardly because like Maddie said, it's staccato notes. It's not like a fluid motion. Like you can just kind of press the buttons in order and it works. So, you know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that is my point, is that you don't have to be like, and then just like do this one fluid move, which can be really hard in the heat of the moment. You really can just kind of be like, okay, what was it again? Oh, yeah, it was just these three things and that. And then you do the thing, which doesn't really work in a fight that well if you're moving that slowly, but it helps me at least get better at them. The thing that strikes me more than anything is just how fucking hilarious and amazing the story is. Okay, the beginning mission of this game is like, I'm going to look her up. I'm forgetting Sonya Blade's daughter, what her name is. It's like Cassie or something. Cassandra Cage, that's it. Of course, Cassie. Cassandra Cage. Okay, so Cassandra Cage is like getting promoted in the Special Forces, where Sonya Blade is her commander. And she's like, you're getting promoted, and you know what the last step of promotion is. And Cassie's like, yeah, I have to beat you in a fight. And so then they fight.
You know how the Special Forces promotions. And you have to fight your mom.
And what's incredible is in the fight, there's this thing you do. There is a variety of like levels of elaborate move in Mortal Kombat. So normally you're just punching, but then sometimes you trigger like a special move where it goes into this whole overwrought, unbelievably violent like animation.
Yeah. And which characters inexplicably recover from beautifully after enduring it.
Cassie's is literally like, it's like smash you in the face, like punch you, shoot you through the chest, shoot you in the leg, like pull you down, like fire like 8 rounds from her handgun
into your
chest.
Skull,
like throw you across the room.
Sonya gets back up and she's like, oh, you almost got me that time.
Incredible. And so like through the fight, and that was how I won the fight, was doing she like throws her mother down and calls up a remote turret that then like shoots a machine gun into her mother's face. And then they're like, all right, good fight. You got the promotion. And it was
great.
Just incredible. Like,
it's like the opposite of Sekiro, where like death doesn't matter, but like in a very weird way.
Right. In a way
like,
that, yes.
No pain actually ever exists. Like it doesn't even affect the storyline in any meaningful way.
Well, and
it's
so
really weird.
And even when people do die, which they do in the prologue.
Which, why
and
would
then
they?
It's,
and how
it's,
could they?
It's very soap opera where you're like, or maybe they didn't. And there's just the thing about the cutscenes in this game is that whoever directs them and makes them is awesome. Like, they're awesome at making them. They're incredibly fun to watch. They're these amazing action sequences. They're really well directed. They're well performed. Everything about them is like so top shelf. And then you just do a fight and then you get to watch another cutscene. And they're so good. It just makes me think that whoever it is at NetherRealm, or maybe they have a whole sub studio, that these people are just movie makers.
They've definitely gotten better as they've gone along. Like, MKX was already like a big improvement over MK9, and I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Like, I want to watch the cutscenes. Like, more than I've wanted to watch the cutscenes in anything
in
a
long time.
It's
very, like, cutscene as reward, like Kingdom Hearts style, where you're like, you fight the fights, and then you get to watch more of the dumb movie that you're watching, and then you hone your skills more and fight some more fights, and then more dumb movie. It's great. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's very entertaining.
Kirk, to your point earlier about how you want to get good at Sekiro, but you don't want to get good at Mortal Kombat 11, we actually got this interesting email from a listener named Chris, and I won't read the whole thing, but basically he said that in a lot of difficult games like Dark Souls and Cuphead and Smash Brothers, you can either grind or call for help or play in short bursts, as opposed to Sekiro, which is this arcane thing where, as we've talked about in the past, you have to spend hours and hours of mastering it. And the interesting point that he brought up is that if you get good at something like Smash, or I will chime in with Mortal Kombat 11, you can carry on those skills and play it over and over again and play it multiplayer, and just like those skills can be really valuable for years and years to come, as opposed to something like Sekiro, where it's like you're going to play the game once and you might have this elaborate mastery of this arcane battle system, but unless there's a Sekiro 2 one day, it will never help you again. It will never be rewarding for your life. It will never be useful for your life again, which I think is a really interesting point and something to think about when you're thinking about, like, do I really want to take the time to master this game's difficulty and this game's control scheme?
It's interesting because that kind of presupposes that the game can never, like, the game has to go beyond itself as a reward unto itself.
Right.
It's sort of viewing things as like, you know, it's the same as the investment. Oh, well, will this game get me loot that will still work in 3 years because it's a service game?
Uh-huh.
Or is this just going to get me to the next cutscene and then I'm going to end it?
Right.
And what's the point of playing anything if you think about it that way, though? It's like, why is it inherently more valuable to win multiplayer matches at MK11, a thing I enjoy, than what Kirk does, which is just play Sekiro by himself? Like, that one experience isn't necessarily...
No, but I think there are people who are wired to think that one way is like more rewarding for them.
Sure.
And there are people who are wired
Which
to
kind
think
do you think
way.
I am? Just out of curiosity.
That's a loaded
it's
question.
It's very obvious which kind of am.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that seems like too easy a question.
I feel like
is there a trick answer there?
It's part of my... What trips me up with single-player games is I see them as, like, very indulgent, but in a nice way, where I'm like, I'm going to settle back with a single-player game. It's like settling back with a book for me, as opposed to, like, how I approach a multiplayer game where I'm like, this is a workout. This is, like, I'm grinding out my reps. Like, I enjoy both of those activities, but I do put them in very different categories.
Right, you got to draw a bubble bath. Like, pour yourself some wine and just play a single player.
Then it's time for Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, there you go. Kirk, what else are you playing?
Oh, man. Okay. So I played a little bit of AC Odyssey, just enough to get, because the new DLC is out.
I've been looking at the footage and like the promo stuff for that game, for the DLC. It looks sick. It looks so cool. I can't wait to play it. I'm jumping back in.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I'm a little, like, I'm kind of done with that game just because I've played 80 some hours of it.
But this
finished
is like
everything.
A fantasy world. Suddenly you're
no,
in this,
but
like
did you play the Origins DLC?
No.
Okay, so this is the same thing. I mean, it's chapter one, and it's like, I had the same thing with the Origins DLC, where it was really cool, because Origins was a cool game, and it was like beautiful, and it was the Egyptian afterlife, and all this really cool stuff, and really amazing looking, and there's kind of fantasy creatures around. And then I just sort of was like, this is just, it's still just more of this game that I played for a shit ton. I played on PS4, and then again on PC, I played like even more of that game probably than Odyssey, and I'm just kind of done. And so I feel like I might go the same way. I don't know. It makes you work for it, which I think is interesting. You start and you are not in Elysium, which is the first chapter is Elysium. I believe that there will be three chapters. Each chapter is a different part of the afterworld. So I'm guessing you'll go to like Hades and I don't know, or the underworld,
Souls.
Whatever.
So
yeah, it makes you work for it, which is cool. It does some cool back and forth stuff with Layla that I thought was neat. Like it involves Layla more. I don't want to. We haven't like done a spoiler cast for this. Did you both finish the entirety of the story of this game?
Not all of the stories.
I don't know if it went.
So it's tricky because the DLC. I don't know how much to say, but I won't say anything specific. But the DLC is based around one of the coolest things that happens in the main game. That is a result of completing, I believe it's the Atlantis storyline in the main game. But the three main storylines, you kind of want to complete those first before you play this DLC, because the DLC is predicated on something that happens during those. That's really cool.
So I have to go do that, which I will.
This
yeah,
very much
too.
Feels like something for people who have just been in it this whole time. For me, it feels a little bit like picking up a book that I put down a while ago and reading an epilogue that I didn't realize was there. But it's cool. I don't know. We'll see. I only just got to Elysium. It kind of took me like quite a while last night. I just thought I had time and didn't. So I'll keep playing probably and check out more. The main thing that I've been playing over the last several days, or like the last week, is Hitman 2, which I came back to and completed. I just played through all of the levels. That game is amazing. That game is like my favorite freaking video game. I love it. It's everything I want from
a
video game.
It's your favorite game ever?
Is it a perfect game?
My favorite
though?
Current video game. It is not perfect. It is so many things that I want in a video game. And it is my current favorite video game. I've been playing a lot of Days Gone, which we're going to talk about in a separate segment.
Yes.
Which is very straightforward and very much just like a video game in a lot of ways. And Days Gone has some systems in it.
AAA-ass video game.
We'll get into this. But it's a more simulated game than I was expecting. It's kind of simulated. It's got some simulated systems and whatever. It's kind of systemic. Yeah. And I just was thinking to myself, well, okay, this is cool. I never finished Hitman 2. What the hell is wrong with me? And I went back, and that game is just like pure simulation. It's so rich and dense. Every simulation of every level is just amazing. And it's so funny and well-written and carefully made and endlessly interesting. I mean, I played through, there's this suburbs level where you're going through houses in the suburbs trying to kill this guy. It's probably the best Hitman level I've ever played. It's so good. I like it probably more than Safian's in the first Hitman. There's like a secret society that meets in this castle. It's the final mission. Is awesome. It's so good. I could rave about it forever. I will spare you, but my God, I love that game. I want to keep playing it. I want to go do the thing where I play every level and beat it in every single possible way. It's just so much more interesting than all the other games I was playing.
Did they ever re-add Sean Bean as an elusive target? Because the first time he was there, they hinted.
Oh yeah,
that
we had that
back.
Whole theory. No, yeah. There was an elusive target active while I started, and I didn't have time to get to it. But there's another one coming, and I want to start doing those now that I know the levels. It's just, it's just everything
I
want.
I had
game.
So much fun doing that elusive target, that first elusive target. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super good game.
It's fantastic. And the only other thing I did was this past weekend, the other couple that Emily and I play Pandemic Legacy with took a trip. We went up to a cabin near Mount Hood, and we're kind of off the grid, and we just played Pandemic Legacy all of Saturday. We just spent the day sitting in this cabin while it was raining and played Pandemic Legacy. We got to, for anyone who's played it.
For the whole day? Wow.
We did other things, but that was our focus. Our goal was.
No food, no sleep.
Nope, just Pandemic. Just quit fucking around. Yep. Play this board game. But we played through, we got to July. So for anyone who's played it, I'm not going to say any spoilers, but anyone who's played it will know what we've seen and what we haven't. This game is bananas. It's Amazing.
This is season one or two?
Season one of season one. Pandemic Legacy. It's incredible. And I'm not going to say anything else. Anyone who's played it will know why I am saying that, though. And holy shit, it's so fucking cool.
Oh,
and
man.
It's good.
So I bought it, but I feel like it's going to be such a commitment. So we have to find the right, Amanda and I have to find the right people to like commit to playing it with. But yeah, I really want to.
It's great. It's fine people to play with. It's so good. I can't say enough good about it. It's fantastic. And anyone listening, if you have someone that you like three other people that you like to play board games with, and you can commit to even just once a month, like once a month game, play it over the course of the year, you will have a good time.
I'm stoked. I'm ready to do this. Nice. All right, let me talk about, so I was traveling, obviously, so I just had my Switch with me, so I played a lot of Switch games. So the first two games I have talked about a lot already. First of all, Baba Is You is still incredible. I'm still diving into it, and you guys don't understand. I was texting Kirk a little bit about this, just to see like how much he had played, and I need to talk about this stuff with somebody, because the way that it expands and like is so much bigger and crazier than you could ever possibly imagine when you're starting is just like wild. So you guys have to play more, because it's just so incredible. Like the things it does are just so hilarious and smart and clever and incredible. And just, it takes a certain type of like, I guess, player to actually enjoy it, because you have to be willing to just stare at a puzzle for like half an hour, or sometimes even an hour, in order to actually solve it. And like sometimes you'll just get totally stumped and you'll go take a shower and then the answer will come to you or something like that. But the things it does later on are just like, I wish I could even hint at them, but to hint at them would be spoiling it. It's just like, imagine every single possible way that this game could break and destroy itself and then like go deeper and like more interesting than you could ever possibly imagine, all just following those same rules. And if you think about the rules, like you can think of possibilities for how it could break itself, because it's a game about rules and breaking those rules and just setting sentences that will do interesting things based on the game's logic. And yeah, it really takes that to the extreme. It's incredible. I'll leave it at that, but you guys have to play more, so you can just,
I'm imagining you on a plane next to Amanda, and you're playing, and then the game says, Amanda is you, and then suddenly you're Amanda, and you look over, and Amanda is you, and you both start screaming. that's what I'm picturing.
That's, the Baba Is You movie would be basically like, what is it?
It just gets more ridiculous.
It's basically Big with what's
well,
his name.
Or a comedy. Body switch
or
movie.
Pretty much
fine.
any 90s comedy about people who swap bodies. Or Shazam. Maybe it's Shazam. Shazam Is You, and that's how he became Shazam.
Sure.
I've also played through all of the first Phoenix Wright game and most of the second one, and those games also remain incredible and are worth playing or replaying.
So the second one, Justice for All, is that?
Yes.
I get them out of order. And then the third one is...
Trials and Tribulations.
Yes. I always thought that Justice for All would be the third one, because it kind of sounds like the end of the trilogy, and Justice for All, and yet it's not. And that's how I remember that it's not the one you think it is.
The titles don't really make any sense. Like, the titles aren't relevant.
No, they're not tied to anything.
No.
Trials and Tribulations, that could be the name of any Phoenix Wright game.
Yeah, it really could. I think later on the titles start making more, or like being more actually linked to what you're playing, but in Justice for All does not mean anything in the game, and neither does Trials and Tribulations. Replaying those games is like reading an old book that you just like forgot all the good mysteries. And so like I found myself surprised a lot of the time, and there's definitely some bullshit in there. In game 2 case 3, it's all about this circus, and it's kind of renowned among Phoenix Wright fans as being the worst case they've ever done, because the mystery actually makes no sense, and like you have to go through some weird logical donuts to actually figure out what to present. You remember that? Do you remember hating it? Because that one I hated.
Yeah, I remember being stuck on it, I think. I don't remember the particulars, but I remember the circus one. Is the second game the one with Franziska von Karma?
It is.
Okay,
it is.
She's like my favorite character.
Yeah, she whips everybody in court.
Yeah.
She
just fools.
She's incredible.
Foolish fools.
And then the cool thing is I just started the final case of game two, which is one of the best ones they've ever done. I remember some parts of it, and I remember it being incredible. Mm. And then game three, the end of that one is also astounding. What they started to do in later games, I think two and beyond, is they have the final case tie up the entire story and like have it all be linked in a really interesting way. But usually they'll have filler cases in the middle of it all. So like usually case three of a game will be the filler case. And that was the case with the circus one. But then the other ones will be linked in some way and it'll be really cool.
Is the end of game three, without specific spoilers, partly because I don't remember, is that the one where it's like kind of about the police officers and the police commissioner guy comes back or something? Or the head prosecutor? He's kind of like an old guy who was a mentor to people. Am I ringing any bells?
No, I think you're thinking of case one. Or of game one. The end of game one.
Oh, is that the final case of game one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's sort of. I haven't gotten to game three yet, so I haven't played game three since it came out in 2007 or whatever. But that what you're describing sounds to me like the end of game one, which is all about Edgeworth and his relationship with Manfred von Karma, who is Franziska von Karma's dad.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Okay, that was game one.
Which remains excellent.
Speaking of amazing soap opera stories, I feel like Phoenix Wright and Mortal Kombat are in a similar kind of realm.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The best Phoenix Wright cases are the ones that are just batshit, like, total soap operas, but also the murder actually makes sense, like when you think about it in your head. And the worst ones are the ones where when you think through like the logic of the crime that is being described, it just makes no sense. They're like they're giant holes, which sometimes happens, usually with the filler cases. And then the final thing I've been playing is Final Fantasy X, which just came out for Switch. Have you guys played that?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you have. Okay, you're both Final Fantasy X. Familiar with Final Fantasy
Knowers.
I thought you were going to say experts. Great video game. I was like,
experts.
I was like, I don't know. Don't
lady
quiz
with
me.
Dress me out of belts.
Yeah. There's great, like, great video game.
Yeah. That's in there.
Has aged very well, I would say, except for one thing. And I think it's time that we all accept that the cloisters, the trials where you do these sphere puzzles, just suck. They are just terrible. Yeah. Do you guys remember those? Basically, so there's six of them. Every time Yuna gets a new summon, you have to go through this like sphere grid puzzle, and it involves picking up spheres, and you can only hold one at a time, and moving them to the right like sphere recesses where you just put it inside of something and something happens. And it's all just bullshit trial and error stuff because there's no actual like design indications of what does what, and it just makes no sense, and it's all just super tedious and nonsensical. But everything else about Final Fantasy X is good, except for the fact that the PC version has these great cheat codes like many of the other Final Fantasy ports and re-releases have, where you can fast forward and you can do no random encounters and that sorts of stuff. And for some reason, it's not in the Switch version. Like, the Switch version reverts to the original PS4 release, which didn't have any cheat codes at all. And it just speaks to, like, yet again, Square Enix just continues to fuck up all these re-releases of their Final Fantasy games, where it's just inconsistent stuff across platforms and, like, inferior bugs and glitches. And it's just really ridiculous that Square has just, like, totally mistreated their biggest and most beloved franchise, which is a bummer. But great video game, worth playing. I think it's a pretty good entry point to Final Fantasy also, if you haven't played a Final Fantasy game, and has been running perfectly on my Switch, in case you're wondering.
Nice.
I've also been playing a lot of Days Gone, but we are going to take a break before we get into that stuff. So why don't we do that, and then we will talk about some zombie killing.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we are back. Kirk, Maddie, you ready to talk about some zombie biking?
Sure.
Biking through the zombies. So Maddie, you have not played any Days Gone, correct?
No, I haven't.
Okay, but Kirk and I both played a ton of it. I think I played more than you. I played like some 20 hours because I actually wound up just chugging through a bunch of it the weekend before I left for Israel. And you've been playing just off and on over the past couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think you're a little farther than me in the story. I've played maybe 10 hours or something like that.
So let's zoom out for a second. So Days Gone is the next big PS4 exclusive. It comes out on April 26th for the PlayStation 4. And it is made by Sony Bend, who are the makers of the Siphon Filter games. And then they made a couple of the Uncharted. They made Uncharted Golden Abyss for the Vita. And then they went off for many years to work on Days Gone. It's an open world zombie game. I once described it as a AAA ass video game a couple months ago on this podcast.
On this very show.
And I say, and by that opinion, having played a bunch more of it, one thing that surprised me actually is that it's surprisingly survival-y in the way that it plays. It feels a lot less like, say, a Far Cry or an Assassin's Creed, where you feel like this ultra badass superhero who can do anything at any time, and more of like The Last of Us or DayZ or another type of survival-y game where your resources are a little more limited, and you actually can't just fast travel anywhere because your bike has a certain amount of gas. You're a biker, by the way. Your bike has a certain amount of gas and you have to refill your tank, and fast traveling actually takes up gas, so you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to zip around here. You actually have to think about it. And yeah, I like it so far. Kirk, what do you think of the game?
I have thoughts. Should we maybe like say what the game is about a little bit? Let me say what the game is about.
Yeah,
for
go for it.
So
yeah, please
you
do.
Play a dude named, is it St. John? I remember we were making fun of the
Deacon,
wrong name.
Deacon St. John.
Yeah, so Deacon St. John. And you are a biker in Oregon who was there when a sort of a zombie uprising happened. They're not called zombies. They're called freakers. They're kind of like rabid mutant humans. So this is in the kind of 28 days later vein. And your
but they're
girl,
zombies. Let's be
they're
real.
Basically zombies. They're yelling, deformed human.
And they are trying
enemies.
To kill you, and you have to kill them, perhaps yes. by shooting them in the head.
Or yes. with a baseball bat.
Mm. Yes. And he was like loading out of the city. I think they were in Portland. They're in Oregon anyway. And his girlfriend and he became separated. He believes she is dead because she was like taken off to a research facility. That's essentially a FEMA research facility that then they later found, and everyone there was dead. So he's kind of mourning her loss and also sort of investigating to find out what happened. And biking around in an area that is essentially like Deschutes National Forest in central Oregon, which is pretty near to where I live and somewhere that I've been a lot. And this has very familiar tableaus in it. You're basically in the shadow of Mount Hood the whole time, which is super cool, just because I live in the shadow of Mount Hood, and Mount Hood is pretty rad, and it looks amazing in this game. So I like that
about
this
game. Yeah, it's gorgeous. What a gorgeous video game.
So the game is, yeah, you're biking around an open world, you're sneaking into houses, you're avoiding zombies, you're fighting raiders. And actually the touchstone that I would use is State of Decay. And so anyone who's played State of Decay will, actually that'll probably make them happy. I really like State of Decay, and I never played the sequel, but I really liked the first game, and this game has a lot in common with that. So it's less survival-y than that, but it is very crafting, limited resource oriented. I don't know. What makes a survival game? Is this a fair question? Do you have to have food? Because there's no food in this. So whenever I hear that a game is surprisingly survival-y, I think of something like Minecraft or Subnautica, like games where you have to eat and your character gets weaker. And that is not the case in this game. It's more you just have to scavenge supplies to make Molotov cocktails, and you get crafting recipes for better melee weapons. And like your weapons break and your guns are kind of crappy and run out of ammo. So you're always kind of scavenging. But it has that feeling that State of Decay has, where you're kind of sneaking into a house and there's zombies and you don't want them to see you, because if they do, you'll get overrun really quickly. So it's a very stealth-oriented thing. It's, mm-hmm. it's more of a stealth game, kind of like throughout. You know, you can do things like roll your motorcycle without driving it to make it quieter. You can kind of coast down a hill if you want to come up on a settlement without letting everybody know.
I don't think State of Decay has the zombie hordes that this has, and that's
it
the
does.
Thing that
it's
oh,
it's
it does,
not
it does.
Rendered in this is like in a much higher fidelity version, but yeah, got State it. Of Decay, you can totally get overrun by hordes of zombies.
Got it.
It really feels similar. State of Decay, obviously, they're different games, but
the reason I brought that up is just because it's an incredible thing that Days Gone has, and the one thing that sets it apart from other games that I've played. I haven't played State of Decay, but it's just that you can run into literally like 100 zombies, and it'll get to the point where you'll be terrified, like out of your mind, like you just ran into this giant horde, or you'll see them in the distance and it's just a horde of marching. Like, it's incredible that they got that many zombies appearing on screen, because it really does just look and feel terrifying.
And the sound of the zombie horde is incredible. That's the best part of the game. The first time that happens in the game, where you're kind of like, okay, I can handle this. Taking out a couple zombies, we're going to clear out this nest. And then suddenly you hear the sound and the music gets crazy. And you're like, what's going on? And then you look at me like, oh shit. There's like, I am going to hide in this dumpster for the next 5 minutes. Fun. I had to like raid a FEMA base. It's very like Ubisoft-y in that they're like raider camps and you have to just go get them, and there are FEMA bases and you have to go explore them, and so there's these kind of clearly demarcated activity types, and one of them is a FEMA base you have to explore. To do those are, I really like those. You have to like climb up on the roof and cut the wires on all the speakers first before you turn the power on, because if you turn the power on and the speakers turn on, this like automated message starts playing and all the zombies in earshot will get super pissed and come attack you. But if you're careful, you can go through and like follow the lines and cut all the wires, which is just kind of fun. But you're doing that, I was doing it to one, and there was a huge horde of zombies just kind of wandering around nearby, and I kept trying like to not have them see me, and then I'd have to run away if they did. It was pretty fun. My overall impressions of this game are pretty positive. I mean, I think it's pretty fun. It's not really doing anything I haven't done before, but like I said, I really like State of Decay. I like the overall feel of just sneaking and, you know, a big stealth style game, the way that Far Cry is like a big open world game with stealth as like a kind of fundamental, you know, enemies don't know you're there until you let them know. Same kind of thing. It's pretty rough. It's like technically rougher than most games. Like PS4 exclusives have been very smooth lately. You know, Spider-Man, God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn. It's kind of like there's like this level of polish that this game doesn't have. It's definitely rougher. I've run into some like pretty significant bugs, you know, like car textures just won't load in. So all the cars look like weird blocks, or like enemy AI that's totally bizarre and really frustrating.
And the frame rate like really chugs.
Yeah, performance issues. It feels a lot more.
They did just add a patch recently, very recently, it's worth noting, that I haven't had a chance to play with a new patch yet.
So some of this stuff definitely feels like day one patch stuff. That is probably like as a result of Sony nicely sending us codes way in advance, which Sony tends to do, and is really nice because you can just play the game and not feel super rushed, even if you are reviewing it. Some of this stuff just seems like it'll get better in patches. So part of the reason I haven't kept playing is I'm like, I don't need to play more than 10 hours of this. I get it. I'll play it once it's a little bit patched. But there's just an overall kind of level of roughness that isn't a huge deal for me, because like I said, State of Decay, I love that game, and that game is rough as fuck. Like, that game was like really, really gnarly and had all kinds of bugs and weird stuff in it, but the core game was fun. So I feel that way about this game. It's not like lighting my hair on fire. Part of the reason that I was so excited playing Hitman was because Hitman is so intelligent and carefully made and sort of just crafty and smart and clever, and it feels like its own thing. And playing that after playing Days Gone, which just really... It just feels like Days Gone feels like a cool, fun video game that's just a video game. The story isn't really incredible, or the characters I don't really get. Actually, one of the reasons I was complaining about Propaganda, Maddie, which I, you know, wasn't going to say but before the embargo was up, was Days Gone, where, God, there's like this character who has a radio station. It's Radio Free Oregon. And his whole thing is just fucking like right-wing gun rights, like, oh, like propaganda, which, and at the end of every broadcast, Deacon argues with him and is like, well, but you're not thinking of this, and kind of presents the other side of the argument. But even so, you spend a kind of a lot of time in this game just listening to this guy rail on.
He doesn't shut up. Oh my God.
Yeah,
and you can skip it, thank God, like just by holding down the touchpad, but he does not stop.
And it, yeah, they happen a lot. And it's just this feeling of like, oh my God, I don't need to fucking listen to this. Like, this is just annoying. So that the characters just aren't doing much for me. There's like the whole fact that Central Oregon biker gangs are like not, I don't know, like there's a lot of like white supremacist garbage in Central Oregon. Oregon is like a deeply racist state, and that's just not a thing at all. We're kind of just playing as this guy. I think it comes up later, I gather, like he talks so some about that
there's
stuff.
There's one flashback where he's talking to Sarah, his wife. There are a lot of flashbacks where they're like, you see how they meet, how they met, and how they got to know each other, et cetera, et cetera. And there's one flashback that I remember where they talk about people of color, and she makes some snide remark about like how you've never, like, have you ever met a person of color? And he talks about how they have one guy in the gang who they're all friends with who's a black guy. And yeah, that's the only time I can remember.
So he trots out the my black friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Trick.
And then
so I don't know.
In one of the camps, there's a black woman who's like a central character.
It's more like that's just kind of a me thing, and like living in Oregon and being aware of all of that baggage. It's just a little bit like, oh, okay, so we're just going to kind of a fantasy version of Oregon, which is honestly, whatever, not a huge deal, but it is there. And I'd sort of, there are just times where I'm like, man, biker gangs in Oregon, is that really who I want like this game to be about? So just a personal thing, but it's sort of like, the setting I love, but the characters in it I don't. Uh-huh. And it is really cool to play a game that so beautifully recreates Central Oregon, which is gorgeous. And like Bend is an amazing city. And it's so cool that the people making this game were like, we want to make a game that just totally is about how beautiful where we live is, because it is super beautiful. And they capture it. I mean, it feels like what I see when I go backpacking every summer. Like, it's really, really nice. And it's, that's so cool. Like, I think that the way that they recreated the landscape is really neat. And I'm not saying they needed to delve into the regional politics and Oregon's history or any of that. It's just a little sticks out to me or something. Like, it's like, you know, in terms of the story itself. And then the story is just kind of weirdly told. The flashbacks are a little weird. It's kind of a weird game. Like, I have a feeling that people are going to like it, that there will just be like a central core of people who, similar to that Mad Max open world game or some of the other, like an open world game that just has a lot of stuff in it. It's really kind of predictable, but it's fun and cool and looks really pretty. And it's just another one of those in a lot of respects. And I think that's great for a lot of people. Like, people will be happy about that.
So it's worth bringing up. So the two main kind of story threads are Deacon, the main character, and his wife Sarah, and the question of her fate. Is she still alive? Is she dead? That's kind of an ongoing question throughout the story. And then as part of that storyline, and when I say storyline, there's a list of storylines in the menu, and you can see how much of a percentage you've done in each one. It's kind of a cool way of framing it. It's like, I'm 60% through this story and 10% through this one. And one of them is about Sarah, and you see her flashbacks, and that's how the reason that you say it's weirdly told, and I agree with you on that point, is because it's told in a way where you only see the flashbacks when you do those specific missions, and you can do them kind of whenever. So that's kind of a weird way of doing it. And there are other weird parts that
they're
kind of
delivered
related
oddly
to it. Yeah,
there's
that's
parts
definitely
where
true.
It becomes interactive for a second, and you fight some guys, but then it's just sort of a cutscene, and then
it just feels
like someone made it, but they didn't quite know how to finish it, and then they just put it in the game, and they're like, well, we need to have this story beat, so whatever.
And then as part of that, you're also tracking down this government group and trying to figure out like what they did with her and if they know her fate. And then the other story is Deacon and his best friend Boozer, who is injured early in the game, and his name is Boozer. Yes, his name is Boozer. Every time I hear it, I think of Carlos Boozer, who was this NBA player for a long time, and that's the only time I've heard that name. But yeah, this guy is Boozer, and he gets hurt early on, and then there's the ongoing question of like, how can you save him and help him out and rescue him? And you and him always talk about riding north, and is that ever going to happen? And those storylines have like kind of grabbed me. I wouldn't say I texted Kirk while I was gone. I was like, I haven't even thought about this game the entire time I've been here, like had any desire to go back to it, which is kind of a bad sign, I think. So I guess I'm not really gripped by the story, and I'm trying trying to think of, like, I'm definitely going to play more, but I'm still trying to decide if I'm playing more out of obligation because I want to see it through and talk about it on the podcast, or because I actually want to finish it. And I think it's the former. Even though it's fun, but not.
That's the thing. Like, it is totally inoffensive as a video game. Like, that sounds like really damning it with faint praise. Like, it's cool. It's beautiful.
It exists.
And there is, like I said, there are really cool things that happen in it, though. Like, the zombie hordes are amazing, and you can, like, play the AIs against one another in cool ways. And it's a little rough, but I bet they'll patch it. And they have plans for more content. And it's neat. I like that. I think people who like motorcycles will really like it. It's very motorcycle heavy. Like, it's not. The biker thing is built into the game. There's a lot of bike customization and cool stuff with your motorcycle. Like, I'm not into motorcycles, but I could see that being cool. It's got a lot going for it. It's really like an appealing game in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's just I, unfairly, hold it up against the other open world PS4 games like Horizon, which sort of came out at a similar time of year and is similar in some ways. And I like that game grabbed me much more thoroughly, much more quickly. Though I will be interested to read reviews of it. I think it's Josh Rivera is reviewing it for Kotaku.
Yeah, he's beaten it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll look forward to reading his review and just hearing from people who've finished the whole thing, because I don't even really have a sense of how big it is. So I really do want to, like, qualify everything I've said on this episode, is that it's based on 10 hours of play. That's, like, my initial impressions, but I don't want to make too many sweeping statements.
I mean, I've been talking to Paul and Josh about it a lot today, so I already kind of know, Paul being our video person, kind of know what those reviews are going to say, and I guess they'll already be up by the time this episode comes out, and it's pretty similar to what you guys are saying, which is that it's
reassuring.
A video game, but it doesn't sound like it really blows your mind, so that's kind of too bad. I don't know whether you guys will decide that you think it's worth playing the entire game or not, but based on what I'm hearing, it doesn't sound like this is a stay up all night and make sure you get this one, or I don't know.
Well, Sony has set the bar pretty high with previous
exclusives.
Yeah, that's the problem. So one thought I had was that one of the things that is keeping me interested is that, unlike Horizon and those other open world games that you were mentioning, Kirk, it feels a lot more like your resources are limited. You have to scrap and care about every single thing and use those bandages wisely. And, like, every time you burn a nest, which you're doing all the time, like, a bunch of the zombies will come out and go for you, and you have to figure out a good way to attack them. And
I wonder if it's the way that I'm playing, but I've never felt resource starved in this game. And I think it's because I've been planning everything very carefully, but I never run out of healing items. Like, I rarely take damage. Huh. I'm sort of playing. I think I exploit the AI a lot. I play smart. I plan everything out, which is fun. Like, that headspace of, okay, I got to go here because I need to get gas and I'm going to stop off here. Like, I like that planning. You're not just kind of flying from one thing to another. But I'm not actually really finding myself very restricted in terms of ammo or guns, but that's probably because I'm, like, never getting in open gunfights with multiple people. I'm, like, very sneak in, kill people one at a time, you know, take out the zombies one by one, distract them, you know, don't ever get in a big fight.
But, interesting. Yeah. Well, try running out of gas, like, in the middle of an abandoned tunnel and, like, because I think sometimes that can actually, like, planning that hard can actually make the game less fun in a way, because you don't have those, like, stories of, like,
of planning. So, like, I know
it's interesting. No, it's just an interesting comparison between, like, that thought, like, thinking ahead so hard that
and
you
just
don't
not giving
have
a shit and running
moments.
Out of gas in a tunnel.
Right. And as a result, like, if you're planning, you're playing the game smartly, but you also are lacking those, like, really wild stories that you can share on a podcast about, I almost died.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I could try it on hard. I think that might help, like, just making it a little more challenging, because I haven't found it to be challenging at all. Even
you
like
could
I've
try
gotten
messing
killed
up
and
a
stuff.
Lot more just so that you could tell a good story on the show, though.
I'll just role play Deacon as, like, a fucking idiot. This guy has no idea what he's doing.
No clue.
It's a cool game, though. It's really, like, it is. I'm a little lukewarm, but I'm not in any way against it.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad.
I'm feeling some people really like it.
Yeah. And yeah, we should play more for sure and see mm-hmm. like where the story goes. And I certainly want to see where the story goes, if it wraps up in a satisfying way, if it does any interesting things. Maybe you'll wind up sacrificing Boozer for Sarah.
I'll be fine.
Like that.
Boozer sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I kept thinking about how the very beginning of the game, this isn't a spoiler because it happens in the first 2 seconds of the game. You put, you're putting Sarah, who's gravely wounded, on a helicopter, and the helicopter pilot says there's only room for one more person, and you look behind you and Boozer is there, and you're like, nope. Deacon's like, nope, I'm not getting on. I'm going to stay with Boozer and let Sarah go. And I was thinking about how it would be a cool, poetic part of the story if at the end, like, Boozer has to sacrifice himself so you and Sarah can escape together or mm-hmm. something like that. So I imagine that's how it's going to end.
He's like, you really should have just gotten on the helicopter, man. Yeah. This whole thing wouldn't have happened.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, so yeah, I'm definitely going to be playing more, and I'll talk about more about it as I play more of the story. For now, why don't we take another break, and then we will get into some off-topic chat.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we are back. Maddie, Kirk, let's talk about what we are doing and watching that is not game related. Maddie, let's start with you. What are you watching these days?
Sure. So not much. I haven't really been home a ton this past week, but I did watch the Carmen Sandiego Netflix reboot. I don't know if you guys knew they rebooted Carmen Sandiego.
Oh, I know.
As an
I watched
animated
like
show
four
on Netflix.
Episodes of it.
It's very cute. Yeah, there isn't a ton to like keep you hooked to it, so I can't really blame you for only watching four episodes. Mm-hmm. It goes by really quick. Yeah. I feel like I would have really loved it if I were in elementary school. Mm-hmm. The animation is really good. If any of y'all listening have kids and you want to like have a show to show them, this is a good one. But it's not, I don't know. It's fine. Yeah. I'm still watching Golden Girls, and I also started this other show called Imposters about con artists, and that show's really good, but I haven't watched a ton of it yet. It's really funny. It's like a funny show about con artists. Anyway, that's it for me.
On Carmen Sandiego, I like shows that are about like heists, so that was my main draw. But I agree that animation is good. I hadn't talked about this on the show, I don't think. It's funny that they make how they make Carmen Sandiego a good guy, because she used to be a thief, and now she steals from thieves.
Right. Yeah.
But I think it's funny that you mentioned that, the thing about like realizing like, okay, this is maybe just actually a kid's show.
Yes.
Because I think that's something that adults have to wrestle with a lot when it comes to these animated shows, especially on Netflix.
Yeah, where, it's kind of hard to tell sometimes like what I'm getting into. Like, is this a kid's show that's kind of also this, for me? Or Carmen Sandiego is actually a kid's show.
Right, and so it's always a few episodes in you have to realize,
Everything we do is something for kids that we're
listen,
just enjoying. Yeah.
Don't you dare. I'm excited to see Endgame, and I will hear nothing.
Right. No, that's definitely for kids.
I know it is. I know.
So
I know.
That, you know, I don't know. Anyways, I think that that is sort of funny. The way that,
it
like,
is.
Voltron and the Dragon Prince and I'm trying to think, She-Ra, where She-Ra is much more like, I'm kind of just watching a show for kids. But that one's a very delightful one that I really like, where Carmen Sandiego is more just, okay, this feels like it would have been on maybe on Disney Afternoon in, like, 2008, and I'm in my 30s, and I don't necessarily, like, I'm not the target audience for this. Despite liking Capers and liking Gina Rodriguez and liking the music and whatever.
Yeah, I'm really glad it exists, but it's not like a must watch. It's
at least
good,
for an adult.
Fine. Yeah, maybe. If you're watching with a kid, I think it would be way better.
Oh, sure.
So speaking of Avengers, I just rewatched on the plane ride this morning Avengers Infinity War. That is a good ass movie. I've got to
say. I rewatched that on a plane and had the same conclusion. I was this is better even than I thought it was.
Yeah. I remember it being good, but I think I enjoyed it less because I was like eager waiting to see what happened. But this second time I picked up more small stuff that like was in between the cracks. I'm like, because it moves so quickly that there's so many one-liners that you miss, especially from Peter Parker. Who is excellent, by the way. Watching that after having played the Spider-Man game makes you enjoy Spider-Man as a character even more. And yeah, that game just, or that movie just holds up extremely well, is very good, and made me so excited for Endgame, which I just bought tickets to see on Sunday. So I am super stoked. Got to stay off Twitter all weekend so I don't spoil myself.
Got to mute a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. My hype is out of control for Endgame.
Yeah. Well, the reviews are all coming in.
I'm worried now.
I'm not even looking at reviews. I don't even want to know. I saw IO9's review. IO9 was like, it's the most incredible thing. And I was like, okay, fine.
I just saw the headline and they were like, it's great. And I'm like, okay, I don't want
to
know anything.
All I need to know is to go see it.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read anything. I just saw that the basic sentiment has been like, this is incredible. This is really good.
Of course it's good.
And also that it's 3 hours long. So, like, bring a bucket.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
Have coffee that day. You'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to do. Strategic dehydration.
And the other interesting thing that you guys will find very fascinating is that the NFL draft is this week. So
finally, we've been counting down.
Do you guys have any big predictions for the NFL draft?
I think Thanos is going to go to the Steelers. I think that Captain America still not clear. He's a free agent now, so we're.
Do you
not
think
sure.
Thanos is going to go and trade half of their draft pick?
Yeah, he's really into that, very philosophical kind of guy.
My only hope for those of you out there who care is that the Jets trade down because they have the number 3 pick and they need more players and not a high draft pick. They need to trade down. That's my hope / prediction is that the Jets trade down. Kirk, what about you? What are you watching?
I kind of want to rewatch Infinity War 2. I was thinking about it.
Me too.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's on Netflix right now, I think, right? Is it still on Netflix? It was. Hopefully they kept it through this week. That would be
they
kind of a bummer.
Probably did. That is a good marketing decision that I think they'd make.
It's not moving to Disney Plus until Disney Plus actually comes out, I would say.
Yeah, my sister's been watching the Avengers or all the Marvel movies in order, and they're still just starting Phase 3, so they're not going to be able to see Endgame when it comes out, but I've been sort of texting with her and it's cool to hear. I think I've talked about this on the show before, but it's cool to hear how the series changed. She just sent me a cool Washington Post article that was written by a woman who is basically like, I just rewatched all of them and watched how the female characters like on these movies like completely changed over the years and got way, way, like just watching something go from like bad to much better. Mm-hmm. And it was cool. Like it's cool looking back at the arc. It's a cool article. Maybe we can link it in show notes. Just remembering there were things I didn't even remember. Like Iron Man, and the very first Iron Man is dancing with Pepper Potts.
I do remember that. I remember being sad about it at the time.
Yeah, so it made no impression on me. Surprise, surprise. But especially like given the time that movie came out, it was like 2004 or something.
And it was also like Iron Man itself was so cool that it was like, all right, we'll forgive
there's some bullshit.
The retrograde politics of this.
And in the scene, he's dancing with Pepper Potts and he's like, I don't remember the particulars, but he's basically like, does this make you nervous? She's like, a little bit, because you're my boss. And he's like, well, you're so beautiful. I mean, I could just fire you. And then it's just kind of a toss-off line where it's like, oh, that Iron Man. Like, and like, you know, and then by at this point, looking at it now, like Pepper Potts is like the head of all of Stark Industries and like they have a healthy relationship and like whatever. And other things too. The fact that Hawkeye and Black Widow have a platonic relationship where they're just really close friends and she's friends with his kids and his wife like isn't the way that Pepper was like really like kind of standoffish against her in Iron Man 2.
Right, in
like,
the earlier, and like, then they try to undo that in, I think, Iron Man 3 where they're just friends at that point. And
Which is nice. Yeah. Like they basically
they set up her and Hulk.
Right.
Right. And like, I had never thought about how cool it is that Hawkeye and Black Widow are just friends.
It is
and that
cool.
They're just like platonic. Like, that can exist between a man and a woman. Like, that, which is just a nice thing. Anyway, whatever. Sidetrack. I thought it was a cool article. We'll link it. And I'm really excited for Endgame. The thing that I watched this week is the HBO show Barry. Have either of you watched this show?
No, but I want to. It's on my list.
It's really interesting. It stars Bill Hader, who I've always thought was kind of a cool actor. He is an assassin, like a hitman who lives in L.A. and discovers that he loves acting. And so he joins this acting class led by what's-his-name who played the Fonz on Happy Days. And he kind of meets a girl there and he just gets into this class. And so it's kind of a mix of... It's like the kind of high concept thing you would totally expect from a show like this. Like, oh, he's a hitman, but he wants to have a normal life, but nobody knows. Like, it's a very Dexter meets kind of Hollywood satire thing. I watched the whole season, and it's not what I was expecting. It's a really interesting and really, like, sharp-edged, kind of pointy show. It's really dark. It's really, like, challenging in some ways. It kind of just jumps between being the show you totally would expect it to be when you hear that premise and being something like a lot darker and a lot more serious. And like, it manages, it makes it work, I think. Like, I think I liked it. I don't know. It's kind of like a really, it was not what I was expecting, especially the last three or so episodes, maybe. I was like, wow, this is a really intense kind of crazy show. So
that's awesome.
I don't, it's weird.
And Bill Hader, like, well, I've heard Bill Hader like really has the chops and can pull it off.
Oh, he's great. Yeah, he's fantastic. And it's just a, yeah, man, it's pretty good. If you're into like Pitch Black, kind of this kind of thing, listeners, I recommend checking it out. I think it's in season two now, which I'll definitely watch at least. It's, yeah, it's, it was cool. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's my off topic for this week.
And obviously we've been watching Game of Thrones, which we'll talk about on the recaps.
Yeah.
And one more thing I meant to mention was that I read a couple of books on my trip, including a book called Them by John Ronson. Have you guys read that book or read any of John Ronson's stuff?
I've heard of
John
it.
Ronson, he's an interesting writer. He also wrote the Publicly Shamed book, and mm-hmm. he wrote a book about sociopaths. He's written a lot of things. He's this interesting dude.
He okay,
he's
yeah.
like this kind of wry British journalist who writes these books that are half first person in autobiography, like, here's how I found this question, and here's my journeys through this, this, and this, and here are all these people that I spoke to. And this book is about him interviewing extremists. So he goes around and he talks to this Islamic extremist, and then he goes and talks to these white supremacists, and he talks to the leader of the Ku Klux Klan and all sorts of other stuff. And yeah, it's an interesting book. I didn't love it because I don't really love his reporting style, and the way that he tells these stories is pretty fragmented. And also he crosses some really crazy ethical lines. He blurs some ethical lines, and he addresses that by saying, did I like blur some ethical lines here? Did I raise ethical questions here? But doesn't actually like really reckon with them. Like at one point he talks about how he's like following around and befriending this Islamic extremist. At one point he is actually guarding this so the Islamic extremists have started this fundraiser for Hezbollah and like terrorist groups in the Middle East. And at one point they say to him, hey, can you watch this bag of money for a second? And he's like standing there watching this bag of money for them and knowing that this bag of money is going to go to terrorists. And he talks about how he's thinking to himself, should I go and like get rid of this? Like turn this in somewhere? Like that would be the right thing to do. And then he doesn't. He just stands there like lets them have the money and go take the money to terrorist groups. So yeah, it certainly kind of was a weird read for that and other reasons. He also is like presenting these empathetic profiles of like white supremacists, and it's just like, oh, surely this woman like can't be that, like it's weird. It has a little too much empathy for some of these people. It also came out a long time ago in 2002, and I wonder how he or another journalist would have approached that same topic today.
There's a really interesting Ezra Klein show with Dia Khan. Do you know her? She's the filmmaker. She made White Right and also a movie
about
jihadis.
We talked about this. Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and that you should listen to that because that's more recent and fascinating. And I still haven't watched White Right, which I really want to watch. I want to watch both of them. They're both on Netflix, I think. She is like incredible in the way she wrestles with some of the similar things and kind of deals with the fact that part of reporting on these white supremacist guys who, you know, basically want her dead means getting to know them because that's such an important part of it, and humanizing them, but also not sympathizing with their cause. She's a very like lucid thinker on that. So. Yeah. I want that book sounds fascinating, and she's fascinating as well.
I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. I just thought it was worth bringing up since I read it. Cool. So why don't we do your music pick, Kirk?
Yeah,
and we'll wrap things up.
So my music pick comes from one of my favorite albums. A few people have been talking about this on Twitter. I think things related to Strong Songs, which is Songs for the Deaf by Queens of the Stone Age. There may have been a music pick from this album that is that's on our Spotify playlist for all of these picks. But I wanted to pick another one. And as a result, I'm going to pick First It Giveth, which is not the song that everybody knows from this album, which is No One Knows. But First It Giveth, in my opinion,
the song that everybody knows is No One Knows.
That's true. Everyone knows No One Knows.
Wow.
Because it had a music video. And I guess some people know, what's the other one? It's like, oh, Go With The Flow. I think that was like a radio song too. This is a killer album. Dave Grohl plays drums on it. Man, he rocks so hard. Anyway, First It Giveth rocks super hard. Here is a clip of that song.
First it giveth.
So yeah, rockin' album, rockin' band. I should get, they have like a new album out that I haven't listened to that people say is really good. Their stuff is generally pretty good. Kind of weird, bunch of dudes in the desert doing peyote and like rocking out.
I'm too busy listening to that new Lizzo album, which is really good.
I have it downloaded and haven't listened to it yet.
Ooh, it's fun.
Maybe,
good running
maybe,
album.
Maybe we can pick a
Maddie's
music
running
pick
playlist of the week. Just kidding. Nice. That's not a segment. We don't need more segments.
That'd be a good segment.
We need more music recommendations.
Nope, we don't.
That's a good reminder. I will totally listen to Lizzo's album. I hear
before,
it's great.
Before we wrap things up, I have something very important to show you guys.
Okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. It's a dog. It's a golden retriever.
It's just
photo.
A picture. It's a picture Amanda just got of Maya the
of
golden
Maya.
Retriever.
Maya the dog.
And
dog.
on that note of you guys seeing a picture of a dog.
Unbridled. On that note of unbridled positivity.
Unbridled mm-hmm. positivity. I think it's time to say goodbye.
All right.
We'll
so
be
it
back
is.
Next week to talk about. I think we're going to. I should give a heads up to everybody. The next week, we are going to do a full on spoiler cast discussion of Avengers Endgame. We'll put it at the end of the episode so that you can. You don't have to skip around. You can just. We'll give you ample warning before we actually get into spoilers. But that'll be fun. We'll dive into that movie and
Yay.
Talk about some more video games.
All right. See you both in a
Woo.
Week.
See you guys next time.
Bye!
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton, Maddie Myers, and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen or email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.
I thought you were going to say, to zoom out for a minute, zombies. What are they? They're dangerous. What
We've
if
all
they,
heard of them.
What if they
Shoot
rose
them in
up?
The head, I always say.
How do you kill one? What do you do if one runs at you?
I'm going to say
these questions
that.
And more are very
I'm
important
start from
to
that
answer.
Part again.